Berger's life had been filled with meetings and work around the clock from the minute he stepped into Miranda's shoes. It was not until Wednesday night, almost 2 weeks after Blomqvist had given her Cortez's research papers on Borgshu, that she had time to address the issue. As she opened the file, she realized that her procrastination also had to do with the fact that she didn't really want to deal with the problem. She already knew that calamity was inevitable. She arrived home in Saltschubaden at 7, unusually early, and it was only when she had to turn off the alarm in the hall that she remembered her husband was away. She had given him an especially long kiss that morning because he was flying to Paris to give some lectures and wouldn't go back until the weekend. She had no idea where he was giving the lectures or what they were about. She went upstairs, ran a bath, and undressed. She took Cortez's folder with her and spent the next half hour reading through the whole story. She couldn't help but smile. The boy was going to be a formidable reporter. He was 26 years old and had been at Millennium for 4 years, right out of journalism school. She felt a certain pride. The story had Millennium's stamp on it from beginning to end. Every T was crossed, every I dotted. But she also felt tremendously depressed. Borgshu was a good man, and she liked him. He was soft-spoken, sharp-witted, and charming, and he seemed unconcerned with prestige. Besides, he was her employer. How the hell could he have been so fucking stupid? She wondered whether there might be another explanation or some mitigating circumstances. But she already knew it would be impossible to explain this away. She put the folder on the windowsill and stretched out in the bath to ponder the situation. Millennium was going to publish the story, no question. If she had still been there, she wouldn't have hesitated. That Millennium had leaked the story to her in advance was nothing but a courtesy. They wanted to reduce the damage to her personally. If the situation had been reversed, if SMP had made some damaging discovery about Millennium's chairman of the board, which happened to be her, they wouldn't have hesitated either. Publication would be a serious blow to Borgshu. The damaging thing was not that his company, Vitavara Inc., had imported goods from a company on the United Nations blacklist of companies using child labour, and in this case slave labour too, in the form of convicts, undoubtedly some of them political prisoners. The really damaging thing was that Borgshu knew about all this and still went on ordering toilets from Fongsu Industries. It was a mark of the sort of greed that did not go down well with the Swedish people in the wake of the revelations about other criminal capitalists, such as Skandia's former president. Borgshu would naturally claim that he did not know about the conditions at Fongsu, but Cortez had solid evidence. If Borgshu took that tack, he would be exposed as a liar. In June 1997, Borgshu had gone to Vietnam to sign the first contracts. He had spent 10 days there on that occasion, and toured the company's factories. If he claimed not to have known that many of the workers there were only 12 or 13 years old, he would look like an idiot. Cortez had demonstrated that in 2001 the UN Commission on Child Labour had added Fongsu Industries to its list of companies that exploit child labour, and that this had then been the subject of magazine articles. Two organisations against child labour, one of them the globally recognised International Joint Effort Against Child Labour in London, had written letters to companies that had placed orders with Fongsu. 7 letters had been sent to Vitavara Inc., and 2 of those were addressed to Borgshu personally. The organisation in London had been very willing to supply the evidence, and Vitavara Inc. had not replied to any of the letters. Worse still, Borgshu went to Vietnam twice more, in 2001 and 2004, to renew the contracts. This was the coup de grace. It would be impossible for Borgshu to claim ignorance. The inevitable media storm could lead to only one thing. If Borgshu was smart, he would apologise and resign from his positions on various boards. If he decided to fight, he would be annihilated. Berger did not care if Borgshu was or was not chairman of the board of Vitavara Inc. What mattered to her was that he was the CEO of SMP. At a time when the newspaper was on the edge and a campaign of rejuvenation was underway, SMP could not afford to keep him. Berger's decision was made. She would go to Borgshu, show him the document, and thereby hope to persuade him to resign before the story was published. If he dug in his heels, she would call an emergency board meeting, explain the situation, and force the board to dismiss Borgshu. And if they did not, she would have to resign, effective immediately. She had been thinking for so long that the bathwater was now cold. She showered and toweled herself off and went to the bedroom to put on a bathrobe. Then she picked up her mobile and called Blomqvist. No answer. She went downstairs to put on some coffee, and for the first time since she had started at SMP, she looked to see whether there was a film on TV that she could watch to relax. As she walked into the living room, she felt a sharp pain in her foot. She looked down and saw blood. She took another step, and pain shot through her entire foot. She had to hop over to an antique chair to sit down. She lifted her foot and saw to her dismay that a shard of glass had pierced her heel. At first she felt faint. Then she steeled herself and took hold of the shard and pulled it out. The pain was appalling, and blood gushed from the wound. She pulled open a drawer in the hall where she kept scarves, gloves, and hats. She found a scarf and wrapped it around her foot and tied it tight. That was not going to be enough, so she reinforced it with another improvised bandage. The bleeding had apparently subsided. She looked at the bloodied piece of glass in amazement. How did this get here? Then she discovered more glass on the hall floor. Jesus Christ. She looked into the living room and saw that the picture window was shattered and the floor was covered in glass. She went back to the front door and put on the outdoor shoes she had kicked off as she came home. That is, she put on one shoe and stuck the toes of her injured foot into the other and hopped into the living room to take stock of the damage. Then she found the brick in the middle of the living room floor. She limped over to the balcony door and went out to the garden. Someone had sprayed in 3-foot-high letters on the back wall. Whore.